Welcome to another episode of Connected with the Toms. I'm Julie, your trauma-informed movement coach.
I'm Dr. Tom here in beautiful springtime Arizona.
And we are a father-daughter duo here to offer you tips and tricks on how to live your best life. And today we're going to dive into, is it possible to get off your prescription drugs? And so this is really more my dad's wheelhouse, but because this is, you know, the nervous system's involved and there are different ways to support ourselves. I'll throw my two cents in the ring after my dad gives the whole, what he believes, is it possible for you to get off your prescription drugs? Because the two popular drugs that many, many people are, and like, I remember when I was working in the fitness industry, it was 1 in 4 people are on an antidepressant. And now I don't know if the stats more than that. Do you know if the stats more than that? That was like 15 years ago. So I'm going to assume it's probably higher. You know what I mean? It's like cancer. The cancer numbers keep going up and up and up too. And blood pressure meds. You hear, you know, I don't think you can throw a stone without hitting somebody who's on some type of blood pressure medication. So, but that being said, this podcast is not specifically about just those two drugs. It's about any type of prescription drug that you might be on. Is it possible to get off and get you on track to letting your body heal itself and align and get your train set up? So before I let my dad take over, we're going to do one quick breathing drill, and we're going to do the one that my dad recommends to a majority of his patients. And we talked about it on our last podcast, which is 4-4-4. Did I say enough fours? 4-4-4-4 breathing. 4 fours. Okay. So how this one works is we inhale for 4, we hold for 4, we exhale for 4, and we hold for 4. And so we're going to practice that one. Dad, you recommend what? 4 rounds? That's what you do? Or do you do it for time?
4 rounds. Basically, you can do it in basically a minute. Because it's 16 seconds for, you know, each of the breaths. So once an hour, 4 of those deep breaths, and you can, the more often you do it, the body will become just used to that. And the goal is that you will naturally, without thinking about it, the body will just naturally start to slow down the number of breaths that you need to take every minute. So it's like practicing. You don't, won't happen the first week or the first month even, but you do it over and over and over, you're just going to find that instead of your 16th, 18th breaths a minute, which is sort of the average that people do, it will truly become, you know, maybe it'll become 10 breaths a minute, eventually down to 6 breaths a minute, which is theoretically all we really need to keep supplying our body with the sufficient oxygen to do everything that.
Exactly. So, and then for my visual people on the listening to this, I actually bought my daughter a breathing hippo. She picked a hippo. There's different animals, but basically it's light. So it's a light turns on. So she basically turns blue. She inhales, it goes purple. She holds, and then it goes blue again. She exhales. And so it basically guides her. So for my visual people, it's super easy. If you have that little hippo next to your, you know, computer or next, you know, in your kitchen, you just flip the switch and it's amazing. And that hippo actually does 4-7-8, which we'll do next time. And just 4-7-8, 4-4-4-4, box breathing. And then, oh, and your regular 5-5, like the heart focus, what we did last time. So it's a pretty cool little thing. So, you know, if you're that visual person, I like it. It's kind of cool. Anyway, so let's get right into it. So what I'm going to do is I'm put my timer and I'm just going to guide you. Okay. So here we go. Breathe. Everybody go ahead and take a big breath in through the nose for 1, 2, 3, 4 and hold 2, 3, 4 out 1, 2, 3, 4 hold 2, 3, 4 in 1, 2, 3, 4 hold out hold in hold out hold in hold out hold. Well done. There you go. There's your minute. How'd that feel? Look good? Fast, refreshing. didn't like it. I didn't like the holds, whatever. Just notice what's happening in your body. So again, you could do an HRV assessment before and after, just see how that resonates with you. So that's the biological, or just take a second and be like, do a quick scan. I feel refreshed. Beautiful. All right, Dad, I'm going to let you take it away now. Thank you.
Okay. The very common question that I get asked basically every day is, whatever medication the person is taking, is it feasible that at some point that I don't have to take it? And I'm not here to say that the answer is yes or no. So all I can tell you is that what I do with my particular patient population who are taking, you know, XYZ medications, of which there are tens of thousands of drugs that people could be taking. So the first thing that we always have to address is, you know, the reason that you were prescribed the medication in the first place. And as Julie said, two of the more common ones that people ask about are high blood pressure medicine, because it's so almost ubiquitously common in our society now, especially since my personal patient population tends to be people over the age of 50, often with a chronic illness that they've had for some period of time. The other one is, especially since COVID, you know, 1 in 4, I don't know the actual statistic, but I'm sure it's higher than that, because I would say that 95% of patients that I now see, anxiety, depression, since COVID, so common, you know, that, you know, they're in their everyday life. So when we start off, what I tell every patient is that I actually will never tell you to stop taking a medication. What I can do, and what I can guide you in, is to help you understand why you are taking that specific medication. And then we will help you try and address and find out the specific reason. So for over many years, without any doubt, the most common medication that patients stop on their own is high blood pressure medicine. And that's the reason is because as they do the things that we have talked about in these podcasts over the last few years, are trying to improve and try and get the body back into a place of balance or homeostasis. So right now, the for all intents and purposes, the present 50 plus drugs that are available for high blood pressure medicine alone focus on two main aspects of our organ systems. One group of medications in general are focused on the heart itself, and the second group of medications are focused on the kidney. So without going into all the physiology and biochemistry of what they're trying to do, what ultimately they're trying to do is to, you know, lower the amount of strain that the heart is under through different mechanisms, or they're trying to decrease the load of fluid that you have in your body to try and change, you know, so they affect the kidney, so you decrease your fluid volume in general. So depending on what medication an individual may be taking, we need to say, okay, well, so first of all, is it working? And it's very common that patients who show up in my office for high blood pressure have tried 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 different ones, because it wasn't sufficient. It didn't lower their blood pressure adequately as per the recommended numbers, which is 120 over 80, is sort of the standard bill of fare. It's sort of, I won't say it's a random number. It's the number that the American Heart Association, I'm sure the Canadian Heart Association, have used for now the past number of years. But the feeling being that if your blood pressure is under those numbers, it will decrease your risk of a cardiovascular accident, aka a heart attack or a stroke, which are the two most serious ones in general, which is why we're trying to control blood pressure for people, because these are, we know, extremely, unfortunately, still the most common cause of death in the Western world in general. So the conversation then has to be, so why are you on high blood pressure medicine? Is there a problem with your heart? Is there a problem with your kidney? And obviously, in a certain number of people, the answer is absolutely. But it's not absolutely from the aspect, oh, well, that's why you have to take your high blood pressure medicine. The question then is, well, why do you have a problem with your kidney? Or why do you have a problem with your heart itself? So once again, the veterans of our podcast will know that we never are satisfied with just saying, well, the heart's a problem. So then we have to investigate, well, so why is the heart a problem? And what is the nature of the heart? So there's, for all intents and purposes, there's two, you know, we have to really make it simple. There's two types of cardiologists. You have the plumber, who's a cardiologist, and you have the electrician, who's a cardiologist. And so the plumber is responsible for your arteries and veins and plaque and cholesterol, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So they're saying, well, you're getting plaque built up in your coronary arteries, so you're not getting enough oxygen. You have the risk of forming blockage. So I need to do something so your heart doesn't have to work as hard. So that's one group of cardiologists, and they'll put in stents and that type of thing. And then you have the other cardiologist, who's the electrician, who basically is responsible for the electrical charge that is responsible for making your heart beat, you know, 60, 70, 75 times a minute, or however often what your pulse is in general. So those are the cardiologists that talk to you about doing pacemakers, because you have an arrhythmia, either your heart is beating too slow, or your heart is beating too fast, or it skips beats, and all kinds of things, you know, types of challenges that our patients are having. So we have the different medications that are given for high blood pressure are dealing with the plumbing problem, for some dealing with the electrical problem, for some in general. So then, of course, from a biological medicine perspective, we have the person obviously keep taking their medication. But then we start saying, but where is the problem? So if you have an electrical problem, we say, well, what are you doing as far as grounding is concerned? We know that electricity is, as we, our bodies are really just a big electromagnet. So, you know, one of the first things that, in addition to all our BTGs, but we have to focus on our grounding. So are you able to get bare feet on grass? Are you able to get bare feet walking on stones or walking on sand or walking in a sandbox if it's in the middle of winter and you don't want to do snow walking? Or you get a grounding mat, or you get a grounding sheet for your bed, you sleep on it, or you have it for your feet when you're sitting watching television or Netflix or at your computer or whatever. So that those are a starting point. Then we have to understand, so if you have an electrical problem in your heart, you invariably have an electrical problem somewhere else. So it's about adding electricity, which you know is one of our five basic things that we have to do for everybody. How do we make sure that we keep recharging the number of electrons in our body? The other aspect of the heart that we are pretty common and in fact, almost routine. I always ask people then about their wisdom teeth, because there's a dental connection from your wisdom teeth and the heart. And, you know, those of you who are into biological dentistry, I don't actually remember if we've done a presentation on dentistry yet, but maybe that we have to put that into our list of podcasts of things that we need to talk about to try and explain, you know, what the hell's a root canal? Do I get a root canal? Do I do an implant? Are root canals bad, et cetera? But leave it be said for this top podcast, there is a connection between all your teeth and all your organs. We'll call them our channels, like acupuncture does, meridian-wise, et cetera. So the four specific teeth that relate to your heart are your wisdom teeth, which most of the people here listening will probably at some point have had their wisdom teeth removed. And that's a function of literally not enough space in our jaws now, since the work of Weston Price back 100 years ago. And since then, our jaws have got smaller, our maxilla has become more compressed, our noses have become more inadequate as far as getting enough oxygen in. So as a result of that, with smaller jaws, we don't have enough room for 32 teeth, at least the vast majority of people don't have room for 32 teeth. So typically between the end of high school, early starting college is sort of the age, because between 18 and 22, which interestingly in the brain protocol is the heart phase, is also the phase when the wisdom teeth typically are supposed to erupt. But we now know that with the wisdom teeth, that very often they're impacted, meaning that they don't have adequate space to come in, and they may be putting pressure on the second premolar in somebody's mouth. So you go to the dentist, and the dentist says, you don't have space for these. We got to take, we, they should be taken out. And then these are the areas that based on the trauma that of getting the tooth removed, is a trauma that gets added into your system. So anybody who has a cardiac issue, you should always ask, what's their history of root canals? Now, some of these people, not root canals, excuse me, of extraction of the wisdom teeth. So when we look at that, there's unfortunately the feasibility that some of these patients will have cavitations, which is a whole other issue, which we'll have to talk about in our dental presentation podcast we do in the future, where you basically are interfering with the energy coming from that area of the body down to the heart. And think about, once again, the age that this has happened. It's during the formative phase when the cardiovascular system is reaching its energetic maturity. So if you add the trauma of the dental thing into this, it's one of the components that needs to be checked or looked at when we're trying to evaluate, is it going to be feasible or possible to get a person off a high blood pressure medicine? And so if you have a cavitation, it's going to be a little bit harder. If you've had your wisdom teeth removed and there's not a problem there, that's something, of course, your dentist is going to have to assess. Then we can take that one out. And if you're doing your electrical grounding, then we know that, we have two pieces of the puzzle. So as we go along and as we introduce more and more of the basic treatment guidelines, as we look at your elimination component, are all your amunctries working efficiently? Are you drinking adequate levels of fluid? When we do a body composition analysis and we see whether or not the amount of fluid in your system is adequate for whether you're male or female, whether for your body size in general, we know that one of the problems is that's required for hypertension, high blood pressure, is some form of cleansing. And, an analogy that just came up in a podcast that we listened to the other day from Desiree Desprong, who basically is a lymphatic expert, so-called, this used the model of an aquarium, which I think is a brilliant model of why the lymphatic system is so critical for high blood pressure, is that if you use the fish that's in the aquarium as being your cell, the water in the aquarium as being the fluid between the cells, and then the filter for the aquarium as being your lymphatic system. If your lymphatic system is congested, then the fluid around your cells is going to be congested also. So and that's going to put an extra fluid burden on your kidney. So they're giving you high blood pressure medicine, a diuretic often, to try and get rid of the fluid. And so our approach is to say, well, why don't we clean the fluid? Why don't we get your lymphatic system working absolutely adequately so that we have the right amount of fluid in your system? So we can do body composition analysis and look at, is most of the water inside the cell where it's supposed to be, or is it outside the cell where it's not supposed to be? And so it's incredibly common. People with high blood pressure are going to find that the difference between intra and extracellular water is less than 3%. In fact, it may be a negative. You may have more water outside the cell than inside, which means you're basically congested. And so the diuretic is given thinking that that's going to solve the problem for high blood pressure. And of course, losing the fluid, it'll make it feel better, but you're not really changing anything because we haven't addressed the problem. So we've talked about the idea of an electrical problem. We've talked about the idea that there's an actual pump problem as far as the heart is concerned, but now we've added the lymphatic piece into this. So when we're looking at high blood pressure medicines and getting people off that over a period of weeks to months, as somebody is optimizing and including the things we talk about on these podcasts into their everyday life, suddenly they start to say, oh my gosh, I started off, I was taking this high blood pressure medicine because my blood pressure was 142 over, 94, it was 160 over 100, or, some numbers that are definitely not good physiologically. But then as you start to incorporate the types of treatments and therapies that we've talked about, suddenly they start to find, taking the same medication, that now their blood pressure isn't 140 over 92. Now it's 130 over 90. And then it becomes 128 over 88. And so over time, they start to do, and it gets to the point that their blood pressure is like 102 over 62, and now they're dizzy or they can't stand up, and they're saying, "Oh my God, I can't think anymore, or I get dizzy if I bend over to tie my shoes," and that type of thing. And it becomes obvious that even though they haven't changed their medicine, their body is working much more efficiently. And so once again, I don't say, so what I'll say is you need to ask your doctor who prescribed the medication for you, it would be wise to reduce your dose of high blood pressure medicine, because it seems that at this point you're probably not needing it. But since I'm not your physician, I can't tell you to stop it. And so I'm not telling you on this podcast to stop it. I'm telling you to talk to the person who prescribed it. And so what is important when you're weaning off any medication is to do some type of check-in. So a blood pressure medicine, that means you take your blood pressure more or less the same time every day when you start off with, ideally every day. So you start to get it, see trends of what it is. And it is preferred that you do it more or less at the same time. Take it in the morning, take it in the morning, take it in the evening, take it in the evening. So you're comparing apples to apples and not comparing apples to oranges in general. So those are just simple things from the first aspect of just my high blood pressure medicine. As the person's blood pressure decreases without changing their medication, you know that their other organ systems are working more efficiently. That is what our goal in biological medicine is to make all your organ systems work efficiently and work with better opportunity. At the same time, if we're looking at, from a wisdom tooth perspective, there may be a dentist involved in this picture also from a high blood pressure medication issue. If there's a more of an electrical problem, that's going on, we have to be looking at how are you charging yourselves. What are you doing for yourself on a regular basis? So, and at the same time, of course, we haven't talked about the whole bugaboo of cholesterol, which if we haven't talked about that on a podcast, that would become another one that is so common, because one of the most common medications, both in the Western world that is prescribed routinely, is high blood pressure, and is a statin medication to try and lower your cholesterol, thinking that that also, in addition to high blood pressure, is going to re potentially reduce your risk of having a cardiovascular accident. So once again, it's another whole discussion that would require another podcast in itself. So we have two more options of the cholesterol drugs, which I'm not going to talk about at this point. How do you get off those? Because it's, some of the, but there's other issues involved in regards to that in general. But I will say that the most common thing that I hear from my patients who, their doctor has said, "Oh, your cholesterol is too high. You should be taking, medication XYZ in an attempt to lower your cholesterol." And people say, "I don't understand why my cholesterol is so high, because my diet, I don't eat fat. I drink skim milk. I don't eat cheese. I cut out red meat. I only eat fish. Or I'm mostly a vegetarian. Why is my cholesterol high?" In my patient population, I would say less than 1% of every one of my patients who've ever said to me, "I have high cholesterol. What's wrong with my diet?" No, I say 99% of the time, it's not your diet. The number one cause of high cholesterol has very little to do. People who listen to this podcast, it's probably not your issue either. Because these people are not eating a diet that is raising their cholesterol, because 80% of the cholesterol in your body has nothing to do with what you're eating. It's actually being made in your liver, and your liver is making it in response to the basic need, two basic needs, more than two, but two most common basic need. Every single cell in your body, which is 10 to the 13, 10 with 13 zeros behind it, needs cholesterol to make the wall. I'll call it the cell wall. It's like building a house, and they bring all the materials, but they forget to bring the 2x4s. It's like, well, how is this house going to stand up with no support? So we have people who are they're driving their cholesterol so low. And so the other aspect of cholesterol is the backbone of many of our hormones. The one I see most often are men. Who historically are, at a potentially higher risk for stress and a variety of different types of things. their doctor has said that their cholesterol is high, so they're on a cholesterol medication. And then when I look at their numbers are so low. In fact, it just happened last week that I know this is unfortunately an American number. His number was 137, which in our, I say 160, 180, under 200 is considered the norm. This gentleman was 137. And his cardiologist said, oh, you need to be on a statin. I said, why? He said, well, he wants it even lower. And then I look at his testosterone, and he's on testosterone because he can't make any testosterone because he doesn't have any cholesterol to make his raw material. I said, you're fighting yourself. You don't have any raw material to make a hormone. So instead of, finding out the right balance of that, they're giving you a testosterone because you have low testosterone. So it's an interesting aspect that, one, so the cardiologist doesn't worry about the testosterone, and the gynecologist, or the endocrinologist rather, doesn't worry about the statin drug. He just says, well, I'll give you the testosterone. The cardiologist says, I'll give you the statin, but they don't talk to each other, saying maybe we're affecting, what's going on here. So when we look at the cholesterol aspect of things, it's not so much what you're eating. It is 100% what your hormones need, and more importantly, it's what your stress level is, which comes back to the number one problem with high blood pressure, which is your nervous system. I would say 99% of patients who are successful in getting off high blood pressure medicine, in addition to the preamble that I just said, until you get that your nervous system into balanced sympathetic, parasympathetic, which is your basically, it's the orchestra leader for everything that's going on. It's the number one organ system in my patient population that needs to be supported with any attempt of getting off, or weaning off, high blood pressure with the blessing of your physician. And I'll stop there, and I'm sure Julie will have some type of comment about something better.
I always have a comment about something now that I know how to use my voice. So there you go. But I was going to say, yeah, like that, that's, I was going to bring in the nervous system because, as we know, most dis-ease in our body is from the nervous system. So when my dad talked about doing your blood pressure testing, I highly, highly, highly recommend that you do your HRV as well. Do it in conjunction at the same time. So because we want to get that measure, because that HRV will tell you how stressed you are. And so something that I learned a while ago about testing your blood pressure as well is that you can get different readings on your left arm and on your right arm because of how stress, and as my dad eloquently explained, the lymphatic system. So the thing is, if your filter is, struggling a little bit and your lymph isn't moving as well, it's going to impact your blood pressure, right arm versus left arm. And there's actually been some research that I read a while ago, I guess now, about grip strength and blood pressure. Have you heard of this, Dad? How like your grip strength is related to your blood pressure. So if by improving, so like if you're someone that does go to the gym and loves lifting weights, by improving your overall strength, it actually helps decrease your blood pressure because, and you do it via your grip strength. So I actually tested that. So I had a dynamometer, I bought a dynamometer, and I was testing it with a couple clients. And sure enough, I mean, we're also doing other things like supporting the lymph and getting them grounding sheets. And we're doing a lot of things that my dad's talking about as well. So it's not just one thing. And I think that's the thing that we can probably agree on with biological medicine. It's not just one tool or one modality that works. It's often a combination of things, but it's really finding the one that resonates with your nervous system first. So, like you're like, okay, I know I'm stressed. What's the first thing I'm going to do? Right? You got to pick something out of the hat. And that's actually something that I am doing, is actually I write down a bunch of exercises, or not exercise, modalities, you'd say, like a vagus nerve, ear massage, or humming, or breath work, or lymphatic. And I put in a hat. And then every day I pick out that thing. And that's the thing I do that day. So it's some way, it's a fun game, because as we know, Dad, like in all the basic treatment guidelines, the number one modality, or the number one, what should I say? What's the word I'm looking for? No, number one tool that you that's on one of the number one natural law that people struggle with, if that makes sense, is play, right? So we want to bring in that play. And that's the thing is, you know, finding ways for us to shift the nervous system. And a lot of times when you're stuck in stress, survival mode, you're stuck in whatever you want to call it, you have high blood pressure, it's hard to find time to play. It just, that's the how the nervous system works. So, you know, there's just some fun ways to do that. But yeah, so I just wanted to throw that in. Like, have you heard that with the grip strength and the blood pressure? You heard that? Yeah, you have? Okay. So
yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah. So, I mean, there's different ways to come at it, but at the end of the day, it's really about nurturing your nervous system, you know? So if you're going to, you know, do you want to get off these prescription drugs? Like what I hear and with the population that I work with is that I don't like medication and I don't want to be on this. So what can I do to make sure I don't have to take these things? And that's where, you know, all the things that we talk about on these podcasts come into play, and we just start lining them up and start healing the nervous system, you know, one modality at a time. And they all work together because we're, you know, like if you use the aquarium example, you know, we're really trying to clean up the water, get the filter. That's why castor, I'm like, I remember this, my dad, castor oil pack a day keeps the doctor away. Like, it's just something that, you know, like it just, you know, it's just, how is it not common knowledge to the whole world? But that's why we need you as the listener to be able to keep share this stuff with the world, because, you know, it's simple and effective. Yeah. So it is possible, but we're not telling you, you know, like, you know, that you should do it. What I recommend, and I'm sure my dad would agree with this, is that you look at bringing in the natural laws, bringing in the basic treatment guidelines more into your life. And then next thing you know, things will align and you won't need your meds and you'll feel so much better. And that's kind of the point, right? Did you want to talk about antidepressant drugs, or is it basically the same idea as the cholesterol and the blood pressure meds? Or is it different?
Before we get there, I just want to reiterate that we're not anti-medication. Medications are life-saving, and you know, the aspect that I never put a timeline on somebody if they choose or wanting to wean off of medication. The most common reason, of course, that people want to wean off of medication is because they are having what are typically called adverse effects or side effects, but they're actually not side effects. The drug is doing exactly what it's supposed to be doing. And when the drug is doing what it is, you may not like the fact that your blood pressure gets too low, or you get lightheaded, or you're dizzy, or you're really tired. It's like, well, I don't want to take the drug while it's doing it. But that's what it's supposed to do in order to lower your blood pressure. Or somebody saying, do we roll into an antidepressant or an anti-anxiety medication? Per se, well, I don't like the adverse effects because I'm like a zombie, or I can't feel like function, or I can't think normally, or I feel I've lost, you know, my ability to do X, Y, or Z. But at the same time, you know, my mood is better, or I don't feel depressed, or I get up and, you know, the it's not a gray day. It's actually an okay day. And the sun is, even if the sun is shining or not, it's, you know, it feels better to be able to do that. So think of medications as doing exactly what they need to do. The issue becomes, can you tolerate the adverse effects? They're not side effects. They're the actual normal effect from whatever the medication is supposed to be doing. And that's true of any medication. Remember that most medications are not supporting physiology. They're going against physiology, which is sort of the opposite of the approach of biological medicine, where we're supporting physiology. We're trying to make the body work more efficiently. But in order to get to efficiency, it's often essential and necessary that you take a medication. It doesn't make sense to have somebody with a, you know, 160 over, you know, 98 blood pressure to say, well, we'll do these. We want you to do some lymphatic and learn how to breathe properly and start doing castor oil packs and et cetera, et cetera. And over time, it'll get better, because in the meantime, you may have a catastrophic event, which is not in your patient's, your best interest. So, you know, medications play a role in biological medicine and in supporting patients. The goal is to try and just understand why you have it. And the more that you understand, the more you deal with your learned perceptions, your past traumas, your transgenerational potential traumas, whether it's through ancestry or 23andMe or however you're looking at your own genetics as to what your potential, you know, future may be, you have the ability to change things. So because of with COVID, as I said earlier, has been a dramatic increase, or maybe just an awareness, if not an increase. And people were just so busy in their life that they didn't pay attention to what their emotions were like. But when they had time to sit and, you know, not being able to go out and do things, and their life had to change because of the pandemic, people became more aware. It's like, well, am I really doing the things in my life that I really want to be doing? Am I accomplishing things? A previous podcast, we talked about our purpose, the reason that we're here. What is our own personal mission and what we're trying to accomplish? And people started to realize, it's like, what is my mission? What is my purpose? What am I doing here anyway? It's like, and so they started to put, I'll say, doom and gloom into their life. So the medication temporarily certainly can support people. And the biggest challenge that I find with high blood pressure medicine, when somebody is trying to wean off, Prozac, which is still given, not as commonly, but still is, because we have a lot more designer antidepressants that are available, is they're afraid to stop, even if they feel wonderful. They're afraid to stop, even though the manufacturers of these medications will say that at least one in two people taking them, it's not doing anything. The medication, and that's what their own research shows. So the medication doesn't do anything, but people get, well, I'm feeling better, so it must be the drug doing it. Not realizing it's the positive changes that they've made that are actually responsible for the fact that they are doing better, and they could wean off. But, you know, once again, that's an individual choice working with your doctor or psychologist or psychiatrist or whoever wants to get prescribed the medication for you individually, to make a decision as to whether it's feasible to start to wean away from it. We never recommend that any medication that you take, you just stop taking it. Certainly not without anybody's professional advice on what, depending on what the medication is in general. What we do know is, you know, the standby, you know, it's like if you have a headache and take Tylenol, and I say, what happens? And they say, well, I don't feel it. I said, so you assume you have a Tylenol deficiency? We know that's not the reason that the headache got better. It's doing something, so it's just blunting the actual impact of what it is that you're experiencing. So, and we can pretty much say the same thing for any medication, be it an anti-anxiety, antidepressant, the high blood pressure meds. But you can take any medication that you're looking at and do the same discussion that we've just been talking about. It's like, let's look at the natural laws. Let's look at the type of things in your life that you may not yet be incorporating that you can start to incorporate. Our last podcast specifically talked about different breathing techniques. And the last four now, we've started with an exercise. Today was box breathing, if you like, 4-4-4-4. And you saw how easy it is. And we're suggesting, you know, 1 minute per hour, every hour, stand up. You know, take a little stroll for 30 seconds and do, while you're doing that, do two of your box press, turn around and come back and do two more of your box press. And you've spent all of 64 seconds and moved your body in that time frame. And the combination of those types of things dramatically have an impact on affecting people's mood. It affects their anxiety level, but it also affects your lymphatic system. It affects your how you think. It affects your vision. It affects everything that we do. So it's these tools that we are trying to share with you that are so valuable in everyday life. And because our world, unfortunately, is in such grave turmoil, and so many people are in places of distress, you know, it's not a surprise that we see so many different conflicts around the world, or in the United States, or in Canada, or wherever it is that you're living, that you can look at individually. And don't think that you can't solve some of these problems individually, because if you feel better, you know, there's something to be said about smiling. You know, it takes more muscles to frown than it does to smile. And so when you smile and are walking around smiling, people either think you're weird or they'll ask, oh, what are you so happy about? I said, I'm just happy to be alive. I'm happy I woke up this morning because the alternative of getting out of bed is not very good per se. So, you know, you can influence other people around you. And that's what we're trying to do, trying to have you in your own personal life influence those dearest and closest to you, your own personal family, your parents, your grandparents, your neighbors. And if we all basically adopted that particular type of approach, we would find that we're a happier world. And so, well, we have to start with ourselves. We have to start with ourselves looking at what we're doing for ourselves, incorporating many of the tools that we've been talking about. And whatever medication you're taking for whatever reason, I'm not saying that you will, depending on, you may be taking, you know, something to treat an autoimmune disease. You know, we can talk about Hashimoto's, which is very common, the most common autoimmune disease as far as thyroid is concerned. People think, oh, once you take thyroid medication, you've got to be on it forever, which is not true. Sort of like high blood pressure medicine. You know, as long as you have a thyroid and haven't had it removed because you had thyroid cancer, but still have thyroid tissue, you have the ability, even if you have hypothyroid, you still have the ability to make adequate levels of thyroid hormone. But, you know, it means you have to work at it. It's sometimes, oh, it's just easy. I just take this pill in the morning and I have to think about it. Well, not many people are happy with that. So by all means, keep taking your thyroid medication to support that. But for those who say, do I really have to take the thyroid medication? No, if you're willing to do XYZ and you have adequate level of thyroid gland to make thyroid hormone, you can maintain it very efficiently and very effectively, while at the same time calming down the autoimmune process. But we know that there's many pieces of this puzzle. We're trying to juggle many things all at the same time. And so as we're juggling all those types of things, we are affecting. So while we talked about everything we just said about high blood pressure, everything we just said about anxiety and antidepressants equally apply to your thyroid gland. And of course, you could name me any particular condition, and I'll say, go back and listen to this podcast, and what did I say about, you know, high blood pressure? And it's like, oh, you mean I have to get my lymphatic better? I have to get my clear up my inner extracellular matrix. I have to get my electrical in. I have to do my deep breathing, et cetera, et cetera. So I know we always appreciate listeners, but even though we probably sound like broken records, there's a reason we sound like a broken record, because it is well known that the people who are the most successful in incorporating these things on a regular basis. I never care how long it takes you to do it. If you do one thing a month, it's better than no things. You know, they always said if you change, you know, 1% of what it is you do per week, at the end of a year, you will have changed 52 things. That's a lot of positive change. It's very subtle, the types of changes that you're doing. So when you start to work with clients and patients, is start somewhere. You know, we don't have to have the right answer as to which one it is. You know, that the last few of these we've been talking about, what's the right method of breathing? Don't know. Try them. Find the one, whether it's box or the 478, you know, whatever it is, just start incorporating regular basis, and you'll find that you will be successful. If not getting off the medication, perhaps in changing the dose. And the lower the dose, it maintains the result that you're looking for, the less adverse effects that the medication will be causing in other organ systems. So long discussion, what we already familiar with, just keep working at it. Life is a, or health is a lifelong challenge. It's not a 12-step program. It's not something that you do once a day. It's something that you do day in, day out, every day of your life to enjoy your life to the fullest for however many days you have left in this form. So, wow, that's a long discussion.
That's good though. I think it's important to be heard, right? Like I don't think enough people talk about it, and that's why we keep showing up every time we can to be able to remind you, that there are tools and there are ways for you to get unstuck, right? And so, I mean, I think the reality is that when people are on antidepressants or on blood pressure meds and they don't, you know, it's not just one drug. I often hear is that people have like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different pills that they're on. And then it's that counteracting, you know, I'm taking this and then I have to take this because this side effect. So I got to take something. And it's like just this big jumbled chaos in your body. And it's just, it's just adding to the stress, right? At the end of the day. But if that's, you know, like my dad said, if that's easier for you to take a pill and do the thing, and then instead of like doing like, yeah, it's going to take a little bit of work. It is. But I mean, it's my passion, truly my purpose in life, honestly, I think, is to show people how fast you can shift your mood. Like I just had another Instagram reel go viral because of snapping. People had no idea that just that can shift your mood and shift your nervous system. I like that. That's that when they say snap out of it, yeah, respectfully, yes, that we can snap out of that fast, right? So it's just doing these things and like finding a beat. And then I, you know, some people, it's funny just because like one of the comments, she's like, I can't snap with my left hand. I'm like, ooh, a cerebellum problem. Come to me. Let's play, right? And this is where, you know, it opens the door, but people are like, wow, I've never heard of that. But at the end of the day, it's like simple things. And that's my passion, is to show you that there are simple things that you can do like that to shift your mood. And yeah, actually one of your patients, Dad, wrote me a DM me on Instagram, and she's like, she loves me dancing. Like, that's the funny part. I'm like, she loves to see me dance. She's like, you brighten my day every day. And she's like, I've been a patient of your dad's for a long time. And I'm like, that's amazing. I'm like, thank you so much for sharing that with me, because I'm like, I love to hear that. I mean, dancing, it does brighten my day. It makes me fun. And the fun part is my husband's starting to join me now. So it's like, it does spread. People, like my dad said, is that you start to smile and you start to move. And then next thing you know, people in your world will start to follow you. And you just have to be, in the trauma world, it's called a transitional character. You need to be that person to make the change. And you're like, no, I'm taking my power back. And hopefully this podcast inspires you to like take your power back. There are ways you can do it, and you're worth it. Let me just say, you're 100% worth it. You're not alone. And we're here to support you every step of the way. So thank you so much for being here and supporting us. We really appreciate you. Thank you. All right, Dad, is there anything else that you want to throw in there? Or is that where we're going to finish it off?
I think we finish it off. I think for this one,
All right, my dad talked too much. His voice needs a rest. All right, so next time we're going to be talking about, ooh, this is a big one. It's a biggie, how to support yourself after cancer treatment. So those of you that have gone through chemo, radiation, biologics, you know, like done the medical route, what can you do to support yourself during? Is it, or do you want to talk about during and after treatments, Dad? Yeah, whatever. Because I mean, there's some conflicting information, you know. I know, we have a close family friend going through some cancer treatments right now, and it's a lot. It's a lot to, you know, what's going on. I have a new client, same thing. She just finished off with her chemo, and there's a lot of things going on mentally, emotionally, physically. So we want to talk about, offer you some support for that. Anything else you want to add to that, Dad? Or
only the aspect of it's not just for this podcast. Will not just be for treatment people who are experiencing cancer, but there's virtually nobody on the planet anymore who doesn't have a neighbor, yeah, sibling, a parent, a spouse, a sibling, whatever. Cancer is so ubiquitous in our society nowadays that it's a rare person to talk to somebody who doesn't know somebody who isn't presently undergoing treatment of some sort or other from cancer. And we're not here to offer the miracle cure for cancer. We're not going to be talking about, oh, you should do this, and you know, if you don't do this, you'll never get better. You know, if you want to, there's over 450 different types of cancer therapies that Dr. Google talks about.
Wow.
And everybody has, this is their miracle for that. That's not what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about how I support my patients who are undergoing treatment or who have undergone treatment, per se. And so it's applicable to almost anybody because everybody can offer advice. And sometimes the advice is simply just going to hold their hand, to breathe with them, pray with them, stay with them. Maybe with that individual needs. It's not about telling somebody what they should do. It's just being there to support them. We're here to support you, and we'll hopefully give you some within this podcast.
Co-regulate, co-regulate, co-regulate. So thank you for co-regulating with us. We appreciate you, and we will talk to you next time.
Talk to you soon.
We want to remind you that knowledge isn't power. Applied knowledge is power, where knowledge turns to experience. We encourage you to implement the information shared, allowing you to shift your health and energy. And if this is your first time listening, we truly appreciate you being here and would love to have your support by subscribing to our channel. We also love hearing from you, so please connect with us and share your thoughts. And if you have any ideas for future podcasts, please let us know. If you're interested in learning more about biological medicine or trauma-informed movement, check out the show notes. Thanks again for listening, and we look forward to connecting with you in the future.